Hi and welcome back. My name is Avi Heller and together we're learning Masechet Megillah. This series of recordings is a project of the OU Synagogue Services Department, OU Torah, and the Daf HaShavua Foundation. We are on Daf Zayin Amud Aleph 7a, about halfway down. And we are starting a new segment of a topic that we've been discussing already. So I'll just review briefly that we've been talking about the idea that Esther and Mordechai were advocates to the men of the Great Assembly, to the Anshei Knesset Agdola, that the Book of Esther should be, or that the holiday of Purim should be celebrated for all Jews for all time, and that the Book of Esther, Megillat Esther, should also be included. So now we're discussing a little bit the status of the Scroll of Esther. So we're three lines up from where the lines begin to get wide. Towards the end of the third line up from where they start to get wide. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Rav Yehuda said in the name of Shmuel, Esther, the scroll of Esther, Eina mitama et hayadayim. It does not make the hands impure. Now this is a slightly obscure topic. It's dealt with in other places in the Talmud, including in Shabbat and in the areas that deal with Taharot. Basically, the rabbis made a decree, a gzeira, that anyone who touched holy scrolls could not then eat truma, which is holy food. And there was a period of time when they wanted to put the holy scrolls and the holy food together, and it was causing a problem in which it was attracting animals that would then destroy the scrolls. So they wanted to, they created a rule that would separate the scrolls and the holy food. And one of the rules was that if you touched the scroll, you then needed to purify your hands before you could eat truma. What this became, though, is a sign that those scrolls that contaminated your hands, those are the ones that are the holy scrolls. Now, what it means that they're holy scrolls can mean one of two things. Either that they're part of the canon, that is the 24 holy books of the Tanakh, or alternatively, and these things may be related, that these are scrolls that were written under divine inspiration, that were written with Ruach HaKodesh. And that's why the next line in the Gemara says, Lememra, this is to say, the Savar Shmuel that Shmuel held, Esther lav beruach HaKodesh Nemra, that Esther was not said with divine inspiration. In other words, it was just written by Mordechai and Esther, or written by Esther, and it doesn't necessarily have a divine component. V'ha amar Shmuel, but did Shmuel not say, Esther beruach HaKodesh Nemra? We have a tradition that Shmuel actually said that Esther was written with divine inspiration. So now we make a further distinction that there may be two kinds of divine inspiration. Ne'emra likrot, so it may have been considered important enough or divine enough for it to be read on Purim. Velo ne'emra lichtov, but it was not inspired enough for it to be written down and included as one of the books in the Holy Canon, if we read it that way. Or perhaps it just means that Esther as a scroll does not have the same rules as a Torah scroll. In other words, maybe it doesn't contaminate your hands, but it is still considered written with divine, the divine spirit. It's just that when they decided how holy they would treat the scroll of Esther, they decided that they would treat it holy as far as reading, but not holy as far as writing. It's a matter that is further discussed in the halachic literature. But for now, we've basically concluded that Shmuel doesn't have a contradiction in his words. He just means that it's divinely inspired in one way, but not in another. Okay, so as long as we're talking about the question of divine inspiration and which scrolls are considered real scrolls, we go into that topic. I'm on the second wide line, a couple of words in from the second medium wide line. Meitvei, we'll ask a question. Rabbi Meir said, Kohelet eina mitameh et hayadayim. The book of Kohelet, Ecclesiastes, is the second book that we have now reported, does not cause the hands to become impure if you touch it. Umachloket b'shir ashirim, and there is a machloket, there's a disagreement as to whether or not the Song of Songs will cause the hands to be impure. That's how Rabbi Meir understands it. Rabbi Yossi modifies. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Shir Hashirim mitamei et hayadayim. No, the proper tradition is that the Song of Songs is the one that does contaminate the hands. In other words, Shir Hashirim is fully holy. Umachloket b'kohelet, and there's an argument about whether or not Kohelet is. So he reverses the two books. But what we do see here is the three books, Esther, Kohelet, and Shir HaShirim, all of which are the ones that are under discussion for whether or not they should be considered like other holy scrolls or not. So some scholars argue that the reason is that these are the three books in Tanakh that don't have Hashem's name written in them. We're very familiar with the fact that Hashem's name is not written in the book of Esther, but the truth is it also does not appear in Shir HaShirim or in Kohelet as well, and that may be why these things are grouped together, and it may be the reason why we're having this discussion about whether or not they fall under the category of being mitamei et hayadayim, of being holy enough to cause your hands to be impure when you touch them, and you have to purify them before you eat truma, or not. Okay, we continue on. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Kohelet, the book of Kohelet is Mikule Beit Shammai. It is one of the areas where Beit Shammai is lenient. Usually Beit Shammai is stringent. Umechumre Beit Hillel, and it is one of the stringencies of Beit Hillel. Those two abbreviations, Bet Shin is Beit Shammai, and Bet He is Beit Hillel. So in ordinary cases, Beit Hillel is the one that is more lenient. In this case, they are more stringent. Aval, however, Root, Vishir HaShirim, the Esther Metamina Tayadayim. Books that everybody agrees are holy enough that they cause your hands to become impure include Root, the Song of Songs, and Esther. I don't know how Root got into this list. I'm not sure why Root is on this list. But according to Rabbi Shimon, Esther is firmly in the category of books that are divinely inspired. So how would we respond to this? Huda Amar Rabbi Yeshua. You could answer like Rabbi Yeshua. In other words, that the rabbis did not want to accept Esther as a holy book because they already felt that the eradication of Amalek was mentioned in three places, two in the Torah and one in the Nevi'im, as we learned in our previous recording. And since it was learned already in three places, they felt that there was a problem, it was unnecessary to read about the destruction of Amalek, and Haman is kind of the destruction of Amalek, in a fourth place, and therefore they wouldn't need to make Esther into one of the holy books. Tanya, it was learned in a Braita. A Braita, again, is a teaching that's very much like a Mishnah, the same genre as Mishnah, but it is included in a separate collection. It doesn't actually make it into the final copy of the Mishnah. Rabbi Shimon ben Menasseh Omer, Rabbi Shimon the son of Menasseh said, Kohelet eina metamei et hayadayim. The book of Kohelet is not holy enough to be part of the decree that your hands become impure if you touch it. Mipnei shechachmato shel Shlomo hi, because it is not divinely inspired. It's just the chachma, the wisdom of Shlomo. We know Solomon was a very wise man, and he wrote things of his own wisdom. But his own wisdom should not be included in the Tanakh. Amrulo, they said to him, V'chizu bilvad amar, but Kohelet is not the only things that Shlomo said. V'halok var ne'amar, we have a tradition, which is in the book of Malachim, v'yidaber shloshet alafim mashal, that Shlomo wrote 3,000 parables. So those 3,000 parables are his wisdom. But perhaps Kohelet is in a different category. Ve'omer, and it also says, and this book is from, and this quote is from the book of Mishle, which was written by Shlomo, Al Tosef Al Devarav, this is included in the book of Mishle. It's not necessarily talking about David or Shlomo, but it says, Al Tosef Al Devarav, do not add on to his words. So we quoted two verses. One established that Shlomo wrote many, many other parables that were not written down and were lost. And one said, don't add on to his words. My v'omer, why did I need to have two verses? What do I need the second verse for? V'chi tema, because you might say, meimar tuva amar, that Shlomo said many sayings. He was full of wisdom. He spoke many, many things. Di'i bai ichtiv. When there are things that he wanted to write down, he wrote them down. Ud ibai, and things that he wanted, lo ichtiv, he didn't write them down. So, you know, the question of what's the wisdom of Shlomo, as we're saying, is everything is the wisdom of Shlomo. He just decided to write some of them down in the book of Kohelet, and some he didn't write down. Tashma will come to learn Al Tosef Al Devarav. Don't add on to his words. In other words, the things that he wrote down were specifically the things that were divinely inspired, and all the other things were not. So he only wrote down the things that were meant to be kept, and anything that wasn't written down is not added on. So that argument says that the book of Kohelet is actually the part of Shlomo's teachings that are not just his own wisdom, but are divinely inspired, and everything else that was lost was just his wisdom. Okay, continuing on, we're now in the wide lines, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10 lines down, Tanya. We learned in a Braita. We're going to quote quite a number of teachings. Actually, there are going to be 7 of them. 7 teachings that try to argue for different reasons how we know that Esther was said or was written with divine inspiration. We've already seen that there is some machloket, or there's some room for argument, about whether or not Esther was written with divine inspiration. And we know that Esther doesn't have Hashem's name in it. So each of these arguments is to say that there's another way of showing that Esther was said with divine inspiration. Rabbi Eliezer said, Esther Baruch HaKodesh Nemra. Esther was said with divine inspiration, Shenemar, as it says, Vayomer Haman Bilibo. We have a statement when in the middle of the Megillah, when Haman is meeting with Ahasuerus, and Ahasuerus asks, what do you do to a person who the king wants to show favor to? And Haman says in his heart, who does the king want to show favor to more than me? So the idea here, as Rashi explains it, is that how would the writer of the Megillah know what was in Haman's heart if he was not divinely inspired? Rabbi Akiva says, Esther Ruach HaKodesh Ne'emra, Esther was said with Ruach HaKodesh, Ne'emar, Vatihi Esther Noseit Chein Be'enei Koro'eha. When Esther appeared in her queenly garb, she aroused, she was found favorable in the eyes of all who saw her. And again here the Megillah is saying, how would they know that everyone who saw her thought she was lovely and loved her if they didn't have divine inspiration to know what was in people's hearts? Rabbi Meir says, Esther Baruch HaKodesh Ne'emra, Shenemar Vayivada HaDavar LeMordechai. Rabbi Meir's idea is that when Bigtan and Teresh, who were the two bodyguards of Ahasuerus, decided they wanted to kill him, it says that their plot to assassinate him became known to Mordechai. How did it become known to Mordechai? Well, because of divine inspiration. So Mordechai had divine inspiration, and therefore the book of Esther is partially divine inspiration. This is slightly different than the previous two arguments, but in a similar vein. Rabbi Yossi ben Dormaskit Omer, Rabbi Yossi says, Esther Baruch HaKodesh Ne'emra Shenemar Uvabiza Lo Shalchu Et Yadam. As it says that when the Jews defeated their enemies and they were not supposed to, it says that they did not plunder, they did not take the plunder from the cities. So Rabbi Yosef ben Dormaskit says, how would Esther and Mordechai know that they hadn't plundered the cities in far off provinces of Ahasuerus' empire unless they had divine inspiration? Amar Shmuel, and this is now the 5th teaching, he doesn't like any of the answers that have been given so far, and you don't have to like them. I don't like them very much either, really, at least I don't understand them so well. Amar Shmuel, Ihavai Hatam, had I been there, because Shmuel is an Amora, so he comes from a later generation, and all of the previous teachers lived before him. Had I been there, Hava Amina, I would have said, Milta, an idea, the Adifa Mikulhu, that's better than all of the ideas that have been presented so far. Shenemar, as it says, at the end of the Megillah, it says, Kiemu Vikiblu, that the Jews established and accepted all that had been done. And he understands this as Kiemu Lemala, they ratified above, that is in heaven, Mashe Kiblu Lemata, what they had accepted below. So how would the Mordechai and Esther have known what the heavenly court had ratified, that when the Jewish people accepted Purim, the heavenly court accepted their proposal? How would they know that unless it was divinely inspired? What's a little different about Shmuel's teaching is that it's not 100% clear in the words. All the other teachings are pretty clear, like what they are talking about, and we're just trying to understand the import of them. But here, Kiyemu v'kiblu could be read in a simpler sense of saying that the Jewish people just accepted the holiday of Purim, where they accepted what Esther and Mordechai had written. The idea that we should understand it as Kiyamu is something that was done in heaven is totally not clear from the text itself. It's clearly a drasha. Tosfos asks another question on this, which is we find this verse darshaned in another way. Well, we'll come back to that. Let's come back to that afterwards, okay? Right now we are two lines up from where the lines get really wide. So two lines up from there, second word on the line. Amar Rava. Rava says, Lekulhu islehu pircha. To all of these interpretations, we have five of them, there is a question. A pircha is a refutation. Levar midi Shmuel, except for that of Shmuel, delesle pircha, that has no refutation. So Rava says, I heard all five explanations for why Esther is said with divine inspiration, and I think all of them can be refuted except for Shmuel. And now he's going to refute them. De Rabbi Eliezer Svarahu. When Rabbi Eliezer says that Haman was speaking in his heart, that's not really, you don't need divine inspiration. You can just have a Svara, that is, you can use your own logical inference. De Lohave Inish, the Chashiv Lamalka Kavate, that there was no other man who was as important to the king as Haman was. Vahai Kimefish Tuva, the Amar Adate Denafshe Ka'amar. And so when he says later all the things that he wants Achashverosh to do to him, to bring the horse and the crown and the king's clothing, he therefore it can be understood to be referring to himself. So even though Haman said, who would the king like to honor more than me, to himself, because of his later words, you can clearly see that he was referring to himself. So you don't need to have divine inspiration to know that. To Rabbi Akiva, related to Rabbi Akiva, perhaps Dilma k'Rabbi Elazar. Maybe you could understand it the way Rabbi Elazar understands it, who says, the Amar, that when it says that everyone who saw Esther found chayin, that she found chayin in their eyes, melamed shekol echad ve'echad nidmeto lo ke'umato, that everyone saw something sympathetic in here, meaning we like to see things that are familiar to us. And Esther had a way of seeming familiar to everyone. And so, you know, people from this province would think that she looked like a woman from their province, and people from another province would think she looked like their people, and that she had some kind of a face, a chayin, that made everyone just think that they were one of their own. And you wouldn't necessarily need divine inspiration to know this. You could just talk to people. V'had Rabbi Meir, as far as Rabbi Meir, who said that it's because the matter became known to Mordechai, Dilmak Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba, perhaps you could understand it the way Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba understands it. To Amar, Bigtan v'Teresh Shnei Tarshiim Hayu. The Bigtan and Teresh were people who were Tarsites. And what's relevant about this, and we'll see this again later on in Daf 13, Daf Yud Gimel, that Mordechai understood the Tarsi language. It was one of the languages he had to learn in order to join the Sanhedrin. So the fact that Mordechai understood their assassination plot just means that they didn't think anybody would know their language, but he did know their language because he had studied it, not because he had divine inspiration. V'had Rabbi Yossi ben Dor Maskit, regarding Rabbi Yossi bar Dor Maskit, who said that it was because they did it. How could they know that the far-flung communities had not, you know, taken the plunder? Dilma Pristike Shadur, yeah, maybe they sent them a messenger, a quick messenger. They sent them just to let you know that we followed the king's rule and we didn't plunder. So, you know, there's possible that by the time they wrote the Megillah, they would know without using divine inspiration. De Shmuel vade lesle pircha. But for Shmuel, there is no refutation. I looked in a few places. I didn't look far and wide. I'm sure there are people that ask the question, but I don't know why there is no refutation of Shmuel. First of all, as we mentioned before, there's a way that you can read it in the Megillah, not the way Shmuel reads it. Secondly, as Tosfos points out, this particular verse is darshaned in a totally different way in Masechet Shabbat. There it says that the Jewish people reaccepted the Torah, and that this verse, Kiyamu v'kiblu, means Kiyamu mashe kiblu kvar. Here they ratified their acceptance of the Torah, which they had already accepted at Mount Sinai. So this is a totally different drasha. Perhaps you could refute Shmuel by saying that that's the right way to understand it, rather than the way Shmuel says it, which is the heavenly court acceded to what the Jewish people had accepted down below. But Tosfos says, look, you can give two drushas for a verse, and it's not really a refutation. I don't know. I think that's we could put a pin in that there's a room to understand why Shmuel's interpretation is so unassailable. Amar Ravina. Ravina said, Hainu de Amri. This is like what people say. Hainu de Amri Inchi. This is like what people say. Tava chada pilpalta charifta. Better to have one sharp pepper. Mimale tzine kare. From a bunch of dull melons. In other words, Shmuel's answer is a one sharp pepper, and it's really worthwhile. And all the other answers are dull watermelons. So if you want to, or dull melons. If you want to get an answer, better to have one really good answer than a whole bunch of mediocre answers. I find this interesting. One of my forebears was the Tosfos Yom Tov, Rabbi Yom Tov Lipman Heller, and he wrote a commentary on the Rush, Rabbeinu Asher, called Pilpil Charifta, and it's a funny double entendre, because Pilpil Charifta can mean a sharp pepper, or it can mean an incisive analysis, like a pilpul. Pilpul is like a close analysis of Talmud. So his commentary, called Pilpul Charifta, can either mean a sharp pepper or an incisive analysis, and I think it's a really cute name for a commentary. We're just going to conclude very briefly with two postscripts, two additional ways of thinking that the book Scroll of Esther, it was said by divine inspiration, that are not discussed by Rava. So we don't know like what he thinks about them, whether he thinks they are sharp peppers or dull melons. Rav Yosef Amar Mehacha. Rav Yosef says it's from here. Vimeha Purim Ha'ele Lo Ya'avru Mitoch HaYehudim. These days of Purim will never pass from the Jewish people. So there the Megillah is predicting the future. And in predicting the future, it seems like it has divine inspiration. We see that the days of Purim are still celebrated, so perhaps they were right. Rav Nachum Bar Yitzchak Omer Mehacha. Rav Nachum Bar Yitzchak says from the same verse, but the end of the verse, rather than the beginning of the verse, he says it, Vizichram Lo Yasuf Mizaram, that their memory shall never cease from their children. So rather than focusing on the days of Purim, he focuses on their memory, and he thinks that that is a better indicator, that the fact that the Purim will never be forgotten is a sign that it was written with divine inspiration. We'll stop here three lines up from the bottom at the end of this Agadic section, and we'll continue in our next recording going from the bottom of Zayin Amud Bet onto Chet Amud Aleph. Have a wonderful day.